The discussion continues over Senate Bill 5 and its possible repeal. Conservative groups face a legal challenge to their repeal effort, pension reforms likely delayed again, and redrawing legislative and congressional districts. It may seem boring, but it's vitally important to the political process. Good morning, and thanks for listening to All Sides here on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Steve Brown, sitting in for Ann Fisher. And this hour, we're talking Ohio politics. I'm joined in studio this morning by Laura Bischoff. She's the State House correspondent for the Dayton Daily News. Good morning, Laura.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And joining us from the State House is the always prolific Bill Cohen, one of Ohio Public Radio's three hardworking correspondents. Good morning to you, Bill.
Good morning.
And this is a discussion among reporters, but it's open to listeners as well. If you have a thought on Senate Bill 5, some conservative groups trying to exempt Ohio from the federal health insurance mandate, or anything else, please give us a call, 614-292-8513. Again, 292-8513. You can also email allsides@wosu.org or post a note on the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. I know our listeners will be surprised, but what may be the biggest news of the week has to do with Senate Bill 5. That hasn't happened at all lately, right? It's the state's new collective bargaining law that's up for possible repeal on the fall ballot. Now, there are two current developments that we need to mention. First off, the state's five-member ballot board met last week to finalize ballot language. The crux of the fight was over whether voters should check yes or no in order to repeal the law or keep it in place, whatever. Here's state senator and ballot board member Keith Faber taking opponents of the law to task for wanting voters to check no in order to repeal the law.
Your literature and your arguments have been very clear, reject Senate Bill 5. So haven't your organization essentially created voter confusion if we give you the language you're asking for?
And here's a rebuttal from attorney and ballot board member Mark Griffin explaining why the no vote makes sense.
Bob Taft said in 1997, quote, "It's pretty clear from the language of the Constitution and also from precedent, the way in which referendums were previously placed on the ballot, that the issue before the voters is shall the law be approved? So if you're in favor of the law, then you vote yes. If you're not in favor of the law, do you vote no?"
Bill Cohen, Mark Griffin's argument and the one made by unions and their allies won out. Opponents of the law got the no spot they wanted. This seems like a minor detail, but explain why it's so important.
Well, it's important because in controversial issue campaigns, usually everybody wants to be on the vote no side. The political consultants believe that the vote no side has a built-in advantage because there are always two groups of people, in addition to a lot of other groups of people who go to the polls. But there are two groups of people that are key here. The undecided voters, when they've heard both sides of the argument and they go into the voting booth and they're still undecided, they tend to vote no. And also people who are confused tend to vote no. They might say, oh, I want to side with unions or I want to side with taxpayers or whatever. I know who I'm siding with, but am I supposed to vote yes or no? I'm kind of confused. Oh, I better play it safe and vote no. Now, of course, that's not necessarily playing it safe. You might wind up voting the wrong way, even in your own mind, when you find out about it later. But those two groups tend to vote no, and so everybody wants to be on the vote no side, because they think they have a built-in advantage. It just seems harder to convince people to vote yes than to vote no. I can give you 10 reasons to vote no on an issue. You don't need to agree with all 10, but if you agree with just one or two, you will tend to vote no.
You've done some reporting on the polls for Senate Bill 5 and the possible repeal. Are there a lot of people still undecided on this? Do polls seem to show that?
I don't think there's a lot of people undecided. I think the latest poll was something like 56 to 32, something like that. The Quinnipiac University poll, pretty independent poll. It showed, you know, if the vote were held now, the overall proposal would be repealed, even though Ohioans do say they like some aspects of the law. Overall, they say if I have to vote yes or no, I'm going to vote no and repeal it by something like a 24-point margin. So if it's 56 to 32, doing some quick math here, that's 88%. Maybe 10% or 12% maybe are still undecided, but not a lot of swing votes there.
Laura Bischoff, was that surprising to you, the ballot board's ruling on this, giving the opponents of the law the no spot?
Well, no, not really, because when you think about it, the law has not been enacted yet. The referendum process put it on hold. And so you can't really repeal a law that hasn't been enacted yet. So it doesn't make sense to flip it the way that Keith Faber wanted it. So anyway, it makes sense that, as Bill said, you vote yes if you want the bill to go into effect. You vote no if you're against the bill and don't want it to go into effect. And I think
that's really what the definition of a referendum is. And mm-hmm. we've had 12 of these votes over the last century, and that's always the way we've done it. That is the definition of a referendum. You hate a law legislators pass, you hit the streets, you collect enough petition signatures, and you put the law itself up for a vote, and the critics get to be on the vote no side.
And typically the no side wins in referendums. As Bill said, we've had a dozen of these in the last 100 years, and 10 of them, the no side has won. Only two of them have actually passed. One had to do with prohibition.
I think it was like the state version of prohibition.
Prohibition. And then the most recently was just a couple of years ago when the payday lenders spent all that money to put the payday lending law up for a referendum vote. And then they spent a whole bunch more money to try and get everybody to say no to it. And everybody said yes to the payday lending law.
And Bill, everybody,
but a majority.
Bill Cohn, we are expecting millions and millions of dollars in ads and television campaigns leading up to this, right?
Oh, yeah, because just like Wisconsin this week, I think, is the setting for some recall elections over their controversial collective bargaining law, and millions of dollars are being pumped in from outside. Ohio, we're not recalling individual office holders. Instead, we have a constitution that lets people vote laws up or down themselves and become lawmakers. And so in a couple months, Ohio is going to be in the national spotlight. Liberal groups and union groups from all over the country are going to be getting emails. Oh, you know, don't let Ohio pass this terrible collective bargaining law. Otherwise, it's going to spread nationwide. So please send us your money. And the same thing is going to happen on the other side. Chamber of Commerce type groups, business groups, conservative activists, Tea Party advocates from around the country, they're going to be urged to send their dollars to Ohio because, you know, whatever happens in Ohio could spread to the whole country. So, you know, we want Ohio to move in this conservative direction. Let's keep things going there so other states can follow suit. So, yeah, it's going to be national money coming in here. Both sides are going to yell about the other side getting out-of-state money, but they're both going to be willing to take out-of-state money themselves.
And the out-of-state money has already started flowing in on this. The campaign finance reports filed in July show that the We Are Ohio, which is the anti-Senate Bill 5, the union coalition of unions and labor groups, they've already raised like $6 or $6.5 million on this campaign. And the Building a Better Ohio, which is the We Love Senate Bill 5 side. They didn't file a report yet. So we don't, but I imagine they have a substantial amount of money coming in as well.
Bill Cohn, you referenced the Wisconsin recall elections starting today. Bill or Laura, is there a reason that didn't take off in Ohio? Is there a reason that grassroots effort, or maybe it did happen, that there is not a recall push here in Ohio? Why did that happen in Wisconsin?
Because we don't have recall here in Ohio.
That makes sense.
As far as I know, you can't recall the governor.
There's no mechanism for recall of statewide officers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Listeners, but we do have something some of these other states don't have, which is we have the referendum process where citizens, if they want, can try to wipe out a law they don't like that legislators passed, or they can initiate a law. If they think legislators aren't moving quick enough on something, you go out, you hit the streets, collect enough petition signatures, you can put your own proposal on the ballot. So that's our alternative to recall.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, give us a call if you have a thought on Senate Bill 5 or any other measure in state politics right now. Our phone number is 614-292-8513. Again, 614-292-8513. 8513. And I did say there are two developments on Senate Bill 5. Here's the second. All this talk of repeal could be for naught. Here's Jason Mock, a spokesman for the Senate Bill 5 supporters.
We are open-minded and are willing to have a conversation about what the other side of this debate might consider a fair compromise.
A fair compromise? Who ever heard of such a thing? Bill, in your piece that we used this morning, you called this a long shot, a possible compromise. Lay this out for us, what exactly Jason Mock is talking about there and just how long of a shot it is.
Well, I think his side has seen these polls that show at the moment if the new law were put to a vote, voters would say, no, we're going to wipe it out. So his side is trying to say to the union side, hey, how about we do a deal here? And here's what the plan would be. We'll kind of have legislators repeal the law itself, We'll have them do it by themselves, or at least they'll repeal some of the more unpopular parts, like the ban on the right to strike by public employees. But let us keep some other parts that are somewhat popular, like the requirement that all public employees pay at least 15% of their health care premiums. And then you guys, you union guys, you withdraw your referendum, and we'll have kind of a halfway Senate Bill 5, and we'll both avoid having to spend tens of millions of dollars and rallying our people and having all this bitterness, and we'll kind of meet somewhere in the middle, I think. That's how the Columbus Dispatch described this approach in an editorial on Sunday.
And this, the support for this is taking off, or it's still kind of lying in the weeds on the outskirts of this issue, or how would you put that?
Yeah, I'd say it's lying in the weeds, and it may be buried because the union side is saying, look, the time for compromise was months ago when you Republicans in the legislature pushed this through on basically a party line vote. You didn't really do much compromising there. You just pushed through, you rammed through the most anti-union bill you could. You didn't ask Democrats in the minority and unions for their input, really. You didn't really want any input. And so the unions say the time for compromise is long past. We're going to just move ahead, and we're going to defeat Senate Bill 5 handily. Voters are going to repeal it in November. Now, that's where the folks who like Senate Bill 5 say, well, wait a minute, unions. Yeah, that may happen in November, but then Republicans in the legislature are still going to control things. They could come back in January and repass some of those parts of Senate Bill 5 that the voters actually do say they like. So that's kind of the bargaining chip the people who like Senate Bill 5 are throwing out there. They're saying, look, instead of having a halfway measure pass later in January, why don't we just do it now and avoid this nasty fight? But the unions don't seem to be in any mood, and their allies don't seem to be in any mood right now for compromise. They like the energy that they've got on their side right now. They love the fact that the union activists are really feeling energized. They're out on the street. They're protesting. They're picketing. And they like the organizing that they've been able to do around this issue.
Laura Bischoff, is that what you're seeing as well?
I would agree with Bill. I think that the unions have the polling is very much in their favor right now. They are able to raise a bunch of money, and they don't feel like they had any input on the front end of Senate Bill 5. And so why should they compromise now? I don't see any motivation for them compromising.
Is this a sign of weakness among Republicans, among the bill's supporters, talking about compromise at all?
I don't know. I think that they would probably. I think they're politicians, but they're also pragmatists, and they probably see that they are going to. They may end up losing on the whole package, and so maybe if they could preserve certain portions of it, then they'd be better off. You know, if they were able to compromise now and get some of the pieces passed. Preserved anyway, like the health care portion requiring employees to pay 15%, then they wouldn't have the political risk next year of repassing pieces of stuff that the voters may have just turned down. There's a political risk to that, basically undo the will of the people.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, give us a call. The number 614-292-8513. Again, that's 614-292-8513. We're going to take a quick break here, then we'll be back with more from Laura Bischoff with the Dayton Daily News and Bill Cohen from Ohio Public Radio's two reporters based at the State House. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
89.7 FM is your source for NPR news and local news. Stay up to date with issues impacting life in Central Ohio. The award-winning WOSU News team keeps you connected to the community, and the State House News Bureau has the latest in-depth coverage of state government. Listen to news from across the country and from our own backyard on 89.7 NPR News and streaming online at WOSU.org.
Checking the weather forecast for central Ohio. Today we have a chance of showers, maybe even a thunderstorm. Otherwise, mostly sunny and a high of 83. Tonight, humid and an overnight low of 65. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies on Wednesday, a high near 79. And tomorrow night's low, somewhere down around 58. Hasn't been that cool in a long time.
Support for 89.7 comes from Antioch University Midwest, helping working adults complete their bachelor's degree by offering 7 broad BA programs, including health and wellness and humanities. Details at midwest.antioch.edu.
There would be about 6.
Welcome back to All Sides here on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Steve Brown, sitting in for Ann Fisher today. This hour, we're talking state politics. I'm still joined by Laura Bischoff. She covers the State House for the Dayton Daily News. And also with us this morning is Ohio Public Radio's Bill Cohen. We spent the first part of this hour talking about the ballot issue over Senate Bill 5. Tea Party supporters and their allies have their own ballot measure. They gathered more than 385,000 petition signatures in order to ask voters to exempt Ohio from the country's new health insurance mandate. There's been plenty of talk over whether the ballot measure is constitutional, but that aside, the ballot issue may be in jeopardy.
Well, I don't know. It is being challenged right now. The fact that the Secretary of State said that this group did have enough petition signatures and the proposal is going to be on the ballot, that is being challenged by opponents of it, a group called Progress Ohio, a liberal group on the left. They are claiming that there were irregularities in the way these signatures were gathered. Actually, it wasn't so much the signatures themselves that they say are bad, but the folks who circulated them. Progress Ohio claims some of those paid petition circulators didn't fill out the right forms, didn't disclose how they were being paid or where their backgrounds were. And so Progress Ohio says a lot of all those signatures that those folks gathered should be tossed out. And Progress Ohio claims if all the irregularities they claim are confirmed, then you'd have to toss out so many signatures that the Tea Party folks would not have the 385,000 valid signatures they need. They'd still be they'd be short by, I don't know, 28,000 or so. The only problem is, even the problem for the Progress Ohio group is, even if they succeeded in that, the Tea Party folks would then get a 10-day grace period to collect more petition signatures and make up the shortfall. And I think they've shown that they'd probably be able to collect those names in a 10-day period.
And forgive me, Bill, I was trying to fire a piece of audio there. I wasn't trying to put you on the spot. The piece of audio I was trying to get fired there was from Brian Rothenberger. He heads up Progress Ohio, a liberal think tank that, as you say, has filed a lawsuit challenging the health care ballot measure. Here's Rothenberger again. Charlie, line up the second cut of Rothenberger there, listing what he says are some of the issues with those 69,000 signatures that he says should be thrown out.
Who your employer is, whether you list your employer, whether you're an independent contractor or you're working for a company as an employee, those type of things. And that's one of the issues that will be before the court.
And forgive me, that's Brian Rothenberg with Progress Ohio. Bill, again, just political posturing here, or does this suit carry merit?
Well, look, that's all in the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. When a group tries to get an issue on the ballot, whether they be on the left or the right, they say, look, we've got all these petition signatures and the people are speaking. And yet those same groups, when they're on the other side, when they don't like a ballot issue, they say, oh, we think some of these signatures aren't right. The people have been tricked into signing. And so all of a sudden they're on the other side. So, you know, it all depends on where you're at on these issues. And both sides have used this. Both people on the left and the right have both tried in the past to either be on the one side or the other. And they don't see any problem with sometimes defending the signatures and sometimes attacking the signatures.
Sure. We've seen polls on health care exemption. Ohioans, according to the polls, seem to not like the health insurance mandate, but they don't support an exemption. Have you reported on this at all, Laura? Or no, Laura has not reported.
Very little, so.
Bill, that is right? Ohioans seem to not like the health insurance mandate, but they don't want to vote on an exemption.
Yeah, the Quinnipiac poll a month ago came out with an interesting, they just asked two questions. They just said, you know, what do you think of this mandate that everyone buy health insurance? And by more than a 2-to-1 margin, I think it was something like 66% to 27, Ohio registered voters said, no, we don't like this mandate. And then 10 seconds later, the pollsters ask those very same people, okay, you don't like the mandate. Does that mean you're going to vote for this plan to let you opt out of the mandate? And instead of by a 2-to-1 margin, people saying, yeah, of course we're going to vote for it, it was a virtual 50-50 toss-up. I think it was something like 48% said, yeah, we'll vote for it, and 45% said, no, we won't. So the poll didn't ask any more questions after that. So we don't quite know why why were voters not going ahead with that second question. And it, I think it shows that the Tea Party folks, they have their work cut out for them. They do seem to have discussed over the mandate on their side, but that hasn't yet translated into people understanding this idea of some kind of exemption for Ohio on that mandate.
Mm-hmm. And we are going to get back to Senate Bill 5 for just a moment. We do have Emmanuel from Westerville calling. Emmanuel, you're on the air.
Hello. You know, what I want to say is that, you know, we don't trust the Republicans. You know, if they wanted compromise, they would have done it all this while. I don't know why now that we have this strong, you know, people want to change things and they suddenly want to make a compromise. I don't believe them. I don't trust them. They don't like union workers, and that is the main fact. And this bill is just going to go down. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Emmanuel. And again, that's certainly a sentiment that's out there. And Bill, as you've alluded, a lot of Democrats saying, why compromise now?
That's right.
And getting back to the healthcare exemption, a lot of proponents of this exemption, even proponents, have said that it's they've been waffling on the constitutionality of it and say that it's in large part just a mechanism to send the law before the U.S. Supreme Court. Have you seen that as well, Bill?
Yeah, I think that's. I mean, I think the lawyers for the Tea Party folks are. They've made it quite clear. Of course, they do believe that this proposal is constitutional, but that's really not so important as their other goal, which is they believe that if several states pass this kind of opt-out provision, it'll kind of nudge the U.S. Supreme Court when it finally decides the constitutionality of the national health care law. They think it'll nudge the Supreme Court into saying, yes, the national law is constitutional. But, you know, who knows? So, you know, you can view it as something that's really on its merits, or you can view it more as kind of a legal tactic, a pressure tactic.
You're listening to All Sides here on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking state politics this hour. I'm joined here in studio by Laura Bischoff. She's the State House correspondent for the Dayton Daily News. Also joining us from the State House is Ohio Public Radio's Bill Cohen. If you have a question for either of them or a comment about state politics, give us a call at 614-292-8513. Again, that's 614-292-8513. You can also email allsides at wosu.org, or you can post a note on the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. And we do have a call right now from June, calling from Columbus. Good morning, June.
Good morning. Yes, I do have a comment about Senate Bill 5. I believe that it should be voted down, and I believe it will be voted down. And I want to say that there's a lot of talk about calling this a quote-unquote union bill. It's all about union, 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 and I think that's a catchword here. I believe it's a human right for workers. This is a worker bill. For workers to be able to talk with their employers about their working conditions, about their pay, about various other things, about their safety. And I believe that if you're a worker, any worker, whether you belong to a union or not, you need to vote against Senate Bill 5.
June, when this bill was in the legislature, a lot of Democrats were criticizing Republicans for pushing it through, for refusing to come to a compromise. Would you support a compromise now, maybe keeping the parts of the law as Bill Cohen said? Why not?
No, if the public I would not support a compromise because these people, the Republicans especially, did not want a compromise at any point. They pushed it through ruthlessly, and I say no. It's too late for a compromise. The people need to speak on this issue.
If the people seem to favor some measures such as barring public employees from striking, why should those be repealed if the public seems to favor them?
I don't believe the public will seem to favor them. I think that they will not, because as working people, you have to have some leverage with your employer, and that's part of the leverage that workers have. So I think they'll.
Okay. Well, Jude, thanks for your call this morning. Laura Bischoff, is that a surprising sentiment to you at all? Is that that's something we've been talking about a lot this morning, I guess?
No, I think that June sort of represents what a lot of workers feel, is that the bill was pushed through without any opportunity or very little opportunity for compromise. And so, you know, now it's time for a public vote, for the public to have a say in it. She does make the point that this is, you know, we talk about this as a union issue, but there are about 360,000 unionized public employees in Ohio, but that's only a portion, I think about 35% of the overall government workforce. And all public employees will be impacted by portions of Senate Bill 5, for example, the health care mandate that they pay at least 15% toward their health care, the ban on pension pickups, and some of the other provisions. So it's not entirely, it's not purely a union bill. It does affect public workers.
Bill Cohen, can you speak at all to the other provisions of the law that, according to polls, people seem to want to keep in place? You mentioned barring public employees from striking. Any others that you can speak to?
Well, now, wait, let's be clear. The polls show that the voters don't like the ban on strikes.
Oh, forgive me. Okay, I'm sorry. Forgive me.
Okay. And also, the voters don't like the ban on unions negotiating on health care plans. They think that was an overreach by Republicans. But there are three major parts of the bill that the voters seem to like, at least they're telling pollsters they like, and that is the proposal that says, or the part of the bill that says, public employees have to pay at least 15% of their health care premiums. They have to pay at least 10% of their pension expenses, and merit, not longevity, will be the yardstick for pay hikes. Now, of course, that's a provision the unions hate. The teachers, the Ohio Education Association hates that provision. But according to the Quinnipiac poll, a majority of Ohioans likes the idea of merit, not longevity, for pay hikes.
June, forgive me. I put you in a bad position there by giving you a question with a false premise. Again, Bill Cohen correcting me there. Patrick calling with a question about the legality of Senate Bill 5. Patrick, good morning.
Hello. Good morning. I was calling. I don't understand all the ins and outs of the legality of once a law has been passed and the people actually decide en masse to repeal the law, it's legal for them to go ahead and pass it again or parts of it again. It's not dead in its entirety. I thought it would be like almost like a constitutional amendment.
No, actually, this is not a constitutional amendment. It's a law, and it was passed but not yet enacted. The referendum process put it kind of on hold, and so the voters will get to say, yes, we want this law, or no, we don't want this law. And then the lawmakers can come back and, you know, they call it the Ohio Revised Code. They can keep changing things in the law pretty much constantly. And the only way they're held accountable is if the voters say, you know, we want to keep this person or we want to throw them out.
Patrick, thanks for your call. We have Mike calling from Westerville. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to echo the sentiment of one of the previous callers about the repeal being a union bill. I think it's a brilliant tactical move when the folks who like Senate Bill 5 paint it as a union bill, because there is sort of a growing anti-union sentiment, and folks have the false belief, those who aren't in unions, that unions are just flush with money, and you know they just take everything out of context, and it's a good gig if you can get it, but if you don't, you're anti-union. I think even the language in the collective bargaining portion of the bill, when it went to the ballot board, they insisted on putting the word union in there because they wanted to make sure that framing was there to, again, kind of persuade voters sitting on the fence to say, oh, if it's unions, therefore it must be bad. So I just was wondering what Laura and Bill thought of sort of the tainting of this as union when it was really much larger than that.
Laura or Bill?
Yeah.
Well, as I said earlier, I think June was right in that you know, there are 360,000 unionized public employees that are affected by this, but the broader pool of people is about a million public employees that will be affected by this. And I think, you know, it probably is true if they keep saying it is a union bill, union bill, union bill. That is rather unpopular, and of course, union membership in across the United States is really dwindled in the recent decades. I think only about 4-10% maybe nationwide are unionized. 35% of the public employee workforce is unionized.
But I don't think you can get away from using the word union when you describe what Senate Bill 5 does. After all, workers don't negotiate as individuals with the state government or the city government or the schools. It's this bill or this law slashes the power of unions to negotiate on behalf of teachers and garbage collectors and prison guards and so forth and so on. That's the key. So I think the word union has to be there somewhere. I'm not saying in the ballot language. I'm not arguing one way or the other on that. But if somebody asks you, what does this bill do, and you had to summarize it in 5 or 10 words, I think you'd have to say it slashes the power of unions to negotiate on behalf of public employees.
And Mike, thanks so much for your call. And for better or worse, I think we can all agree that union is a loaded word these days. Paul from Worthington. Good morning, Paul. Thanks so much for your call. You're on the air.
Hi. Great show. I'll try to be brief. In terms of this is the health care issue, trying to exempt Ohio from this more or less sort of universal. We are already de facto paying for everybody's insurance. If you get hurt in a car accident, you've got no insurance, no job, no nothing. You go to the emergency room, they take care of you. Well, that cost gets distributed through the hospital system, through physicians, what have you. One way or another, we're all paying for that care. But that's a completely disorganized way to do business. The notion that somehow, if I exempt myself from this, that I'm a free agent is nonsense. The next point, and I'll cut it short here, is that the insurance industry takes somewhere between 15% and 22% for quote-unquote administrative costs, meaning profits and executive salaries, whereas Medicare costs roughly 3% to administer. Now, that's a pretty good spread. If you want to take the savings between 3% and let's give them the benefit of the doubt, 15%, that's still 12% that could go to actual patient care. And I would just sort of leave those two thoughts on the table. Thank you very much.
Laura or Bill, a lot of information there, but the caller suggesting that that it's a way to clear up costs and to cut red tape.
Yeah, this is the argument from the defenders of the national health care law, that there's a lot of inefficiencies here. People going to the emergency room for expensive care, they're not getting preventative care, and the more we can have everyone covered by basic health insurance, then it's going to lower costs for everyone. So this is the argument from the folks who want to keep that law. And they say, look, this mandate that everybody buy insurance, this is the linchpin of the whole law. If you remove that, everything else tumbles. For instance, the part of the proposal that says even if you have pre-existing medical conditions, you can no longer be refused by the insurance company. So this is the argument from the people who want to keep the law and not have any opt-out by Ohio.
We have Tom calling from Circleville, getting back to Senate Bill 5. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm against Senate Bill 5 because I believe it will make the workplace for the people that it's affecting a lot unsafer. My shop where I work is half union and half non-union. Now, I'm non-union, okay? I'm on the non-union side. But I want to say that if it wasn't for the union, our working place wouldn't be as safe as it is right now. When there's deficiencies and stuff and the union bring it up, it gets fixed. If we bring it up, nothing happens. Mm-hmm. Also, the union has also gotten us a good insurance program, and I believe without the union, we wouldn't have the insurance program that we have. Mm-hmm. Also, I think it keeps the employer in check.
Tom, well, thanks so much for your call, and we'll jump right into an opposing call we have here. We have Ruth calling from Kentucky. Ruth, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm from Kentucky, but my husband worked in Ohio. And I think the day of the union is over. You are hired by a group of people. You work for them. You do what you do. other people don't have unions, like that work in department stores and stuff like that. And the union, once you get hired by them, I don't care what you do, you will probably never, ever lose your job because the union is so strong that they actually go against the owners of the company. Without the owners, there would be no union. There would be no job. What in the world is this country coming to where people do not want to do their job, do their best, without having a union in there telling the owners, these are owners of your job, and you should be mm-hmm. glad that you got a job with these people. I am definitely against unions. They are corrupt, and they're getting more corrupt every day. And I do not know what's happening to this country. This whole country has gone to hell in a handbag.
Well, Ruth, how are unions corrupt? How are you alleging they're corrupt?
They are corrupt because they have power. You just look at the heads of these unions. Look at how much money they take from you, the person who's paying your dues, and all the things that they do. They are got their nose in politics, and every time mm-hmm. you turn around, they're involved with things that you don't even know about. They're involved with gambling, corruption, because they've got tons of your money.
Well, Ruth, we don't have any union advocates here, or any union members to oppose what you're saying or to confirm what you're saying, for that matter. But thanks so much for your call. I knew that as soon as I started talking about unions and everything, it would take over the show, and it has. But listeners, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Bill, were you saying something there?
Well, I wanted to just highlight one other provision of Senate Bill 5 that kind of plays into what the caller was just talking about. Under the old collective bargaining law, if you were, let's say, a state employee and you wanted to be a prison guard, well, then you either had to join the union or you at least had to pay the equivalent of union dues, something called a fair share payment. Well, under the new Senate Bill 5, if you didn't want to join the union, you didn't want to make that fair share payment, you don't have to. And that is really seen as a provision that really could cut into the union power that this caller was talking about. So I think it's a very important provision of Senate Bill 5 people ought to make sure they know about.
We have one more quick call I'd like to take before we take a break. Chris from Columbus, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a problem with people whining about health care. Obama administration mandated. How about government telling us you cannot drive a car on the street of any part of the United States without buying insurance? Can we justify that?
Well, I think the opponents of health care have argued that driving a car is a privilege, not a right. But Chris, thanks so much for your call. We really do have to take a break. We'll be right back in just a moment here on All Sides, and you're listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
FM is your all-day NPR news station. Listen to local and national news all day, every day. And you can hear the best in classical music on Classical 101. Listen to your favorite composers 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. It's 89.7 NPR News and Classical 101 from WOSU Public Media. For more information, visit WOSU.org.
Checking the weather forecast for Central Ohio. We have a chance of showers and thunderstorms today. Otherwise, sunshine and a high of about 83, 30% chance of rain. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms mainly before 2 a.m. Very specific there. The overnight low around 65 and 30% chance of rain once again. Wednesday, mostly sunny and a high near 79 tomorrow. Wednesday night, mostly clear, a low around 58. Thursday, more sunshine again, a high of 79, sunshine on Friday, and a high of 82. Good weather is finally coming our way.
Support for 89.7 comes from Fahlgren Mortine, whose wider perspective on marketing can help your brand grow through advertising, public relations, and a full range of communications. Think wider at fahlgrenmortine.com.
Dr. Joel Furman offers an effective plan for shedding weight quickly and reclaiming good health. Learn what it takes to drop those extra pounds with 3 Steps to Incredible Health tomorrow night, starting at 8 o'clock on our sister station, WOSU TV 34.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Steve Brown, sitting in for Ann Fisher. In this hour, we're talking state politics, joined in studio by Laura Bischoff, the State House correspondent for the Dayton Daily News. And also joining us from the State House is Bill Cohen, a correspondent for Ohio Public Radio. Listeners, I apologize. We are going to have to change subjects here. A couple things I really wanted to get into. I apologize for all the people who have called. Another issue reemerging in the State House is pension reform. And Laura Bischoff, I'm reading from your piece in the Sunday paper. The Ohio Retirement Study Council, a bipartisan group that vets all pension legislation and oversees the systems, is seeking a second opinion from an actuarial firm about what changes should be made. And this means lawmakers are not likely to take up pension reform until the first of the year. And Laura, the advice you gave to people waiting on the legislature to shore up changes in their pension funds was to not hold their breath. Why are we seeing this delay again?
This is very typical in pension reform. There are so many stakeholders in it. The public pensions are huge in Ohio. There are five systems that cover about 1.7 million Ohioans, and they have more than $160 billion in money invested. So they are massive systems. And these days in politics and state houses all across the nation, there's a lot of pension reform going on. But it takes a long time to kind of figure out what direction you want to go and whether or not you want to make 1.7 million voters upset and how upset you can make them. Now, a couple of years ago, the pension systems were told to submit 30-year funding plans, basically to show that they have enough money coming in to cover their benefits and their liabilities for the next 30 years, sort of like having a mortgage, that you can pay your mortgage. The pension boards submitted their plans, and for the most part, the plans that are on the table now call for the workers working longer and for less generous pension benefits. The 2008 recession and the market sell-off really put a big dent in the pension funds assets, and then people are living a little bit longer, and the benefits have been improved little by little over the years, and now those benefits are very generous and probably unsustainable. So they need to make some changes. The thing is, though, that the legislators have been busy on other issues like Senate Bill 5 and the state budget and voter identification bills and Lake Erie bill. They've done a lot. They've had a big, busy legislative session, and they have not taken on pension reform. And it looks like this new actuarial study they're going to try and do is going to probably delay things by at least another 4 to 6 months, I would say.
Another part that seems to be upsetting a lot of people is making this possibly a defined contribution plan. Explain what that means.
Well, right now, Ohio's five systems have, for the most part, have what's called a defined benefit plan. And this is where the money is invested from employer and employee contributions over the worker's career. And it's all pooled together. And the money is used to pay a pension check based on the number of years of service and their final average pay. And the benefit is guaranteed even if the investment returns lag. And a defined contribution plan operates more like a 401k, where money is invested for that individual with no guarantee of how much money will be available when the worker retires. For the most part in the private sector, defined contribution plans are what we have. Defined benefit plans are becoming more and more rare. So there's a number of conservative groups that would like to see the public pension system switch to a defined contribution plan because it's less expensive and it's more in line with what the private sector has. But to make that switch would mean you got to figure out what to do with the liabilities of the current plan and how to pay for those. But it would just be politically, it would be a Herculean task.
Is this something that would need to be collectively bargained?
No, interesting. In Ohio law, all the pension stuff is set by the lawmakers for the most part. The only thing that unions negotiate through collective bargaining is the pension pickup. Essentially, you know, workers, public workers pay about 10% toward their retirement, and then the employer, the fire department or the state troopers, the highway patrol or the Department of Corrections or whoever you work for pays a portion, and it ranges anywhere from like 14% for teachers to I think 26 cents on the dollar for troopers.
Doesn't have to be collectively bargained.
No, the pension pickup part is what that's like the only little slice of pension stuff that's not carved out into law.
Tim, calling from Columbus. Good morning, Tim.
Hi. Yes, some of my questions were answered regarding how the pension program was originally set up, but I guess I have two kind of just comments or questions. The first one would be when you talked about the pickup for the pensions for workers that are involved in that program, I often hear it set up as if this was just provided to these people. Going back a bit to the unions, those things were bargained, and as most unions do, that's bargained fairly heavily. So I think that's not something that just was given to them. They fought for that. And the other concern I might have regarding just the pension money in general is how much of that has been taken and used for other uses, if that's possible, if that's legal. It sounds like now there's a big issue with that, and I can understand the fact that people living longer and other factors may allow or maybe call for a bit of changes in the pension, but the money has just gone somewhere. That's a concern to me.
Well, there's two issues there. Tim, are you talking about whether or not the money has been diverted for, like, paying health care benefits?
Gone for another purpose in any way, shape, or form rather than staying there and being used to accrue interest.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that the, pension systems across the nation are really, really in dire straits. But Ohio's is only a little bit on the rocks compared on a, you know, relative scale. Ohio has not taken what's called pension holidays where the employer doesn't make their contributions Ohio's not raided the pension funds in any ways. It's basically always been that the money goes into the pension funds, and then it's trust money, and you can't really, really touch it. It's really Eris Huttress, who runs the Ohio Retirement Study Council, calls it an actuarial ballet, that there's all these moving parts to it, and, you know, as people live longer or the investments really swell in their value or really take a big dive, that there's, you know, you have to make all these adjustments over the years to make sure that you're still in line, that the money coming in covers, you know, the liabilities down the road.
So you mentioned in terms of investments, as most investments do, they wax and wane in terms of their return. So all the investment money all the investment return that was generated by the pension is still in the pension. That's what you're saying?
Yeah.
Whether that's in a very good year or a very bad year.
That's correct. It all stays in the pension system. And, you know, the Ohio Public Employees Retirement System, which is the largest in the state, averaged 8.99% per year as an annualized return for the past 30 years. But this last decade has been really bad, and they've only averaged about 5% over the last 10 years. And so then the question is, well, should they continue with an 8% annual return assumption, or is that too rosy going forward?
Tim, thanks so much for your call. I didn't mean to cut you off there. Jerry calling from Cincinnati. Jerry, go ahead.
Yes, hello. I would like to ask if anyone has ever heard or seen the comprehensive annual finance report for the state of Ohio, which would include all revenues taken in, from library fines, parking ticket fines, court fines, everything that is not included in the normal budget. If you get on Google and look up comprehensive annual finance report, I think you'll be amazed.
Why is that?
Because there is much more money available than what they're telling us is available.
Bill or Laura, have either of you seen that report?
Well, CAFRAs, as they're known, or Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports, are prepared by pretty much every government unit across the state, and they are, as they're titled, very comprehensive. So, yeah, I've looked at CAFRAs in the past.
Jerry, well, thanks so much for your call. One issue I did want to touch on briefly, it looks like it will be ever so briefly, is redistricting. Wanted to talk on prison escapes as well, but we'll have to end with redistricting here. Daniel Takagi, a political science professor at Ohio State University, I think summed up redistricting best during a recent appearance on this program when he called it boring but critically important.
Because how district lines are drawn affects who gets elected to office, what party will control the legislative process, at least in some instances. And it also affects the decisions that people make once they get elected to office. And if we have districts that are safe, in other words, they're heavily weighted towards one party or the other, what we're very likely to get is exactly the sort of stalemate that we see in Washington at just this moment.
And it's usually the minority party who's complaining about this process, as Armin Budish is doing right now with the apportionment board. That's the board that's redrawing the political maps. Bill or Laura, what's the status of the apportionment board, and are we kind of stuck with this process? I don't think it's always being criticized the way political maps are drawn in Ohio. But is there any real effort to change the way it's done?
There was an effort in 2005. Groups that called themselves Good Government collected petition signatures. They put several proposals they called government reform on the ballot. Ohioans had a chance in 2005 to supposedly take the politics out, the power politics out of the redistricting and reapportionment system, and put what these groups said was a more fair system. And Ohioans voted down that proposal, I think something like 3-1.
It's interesting because you do hear normal, everyday Joe Schmo complaining about this process, at least seemingly, right? I mean, it's a process that people say where politicians choose their voters, not the other way around. Is that a common criticism?
Yeah, people who are getting messed over by the system, mm-hmm. let's say Democrats right now, they yeah. know Republicans are in control, so the Democrats are complaining. Right. There have been other times when Democrats have been in control in the 1970s. They drew the map to make sure they had the majority in the legislature, and it was Republicans complaining. So it's always in the eyes of the beholder, and the two partisan parties, they switch roles depending on who's in power and who's drawing the lines.
Right. Well, we are out of time this hour, and I apologize for throwing that last topic in there with just about 3 minutes to go, but it's something I really want to talk about. Laura Bischoff, the State House correspondent for the Dayton Daily News, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Bill Cohen from Ohio Public Radio. Thanks so much, Bill.
Thank you.
You're listening to All Sides here on 89.7 NPR News.